Welcome to WebRush, the weekly talk show that brings you stories of real-world development from industry experts and developers like you and me. Each week, Ward Bell, Dan Wallin, Craig Shoemaker, and John Papa find out what it takes to write, deploy, and maintain apps that stand up to the demands of the real world. And now, here are your hosts.
Welcome back to WebRush. This is episode 206. And today, it's just a little story about Jack and Diane. Two little grids growing up the best they can.
Oh, boy.
My name's John Poppin, and I'm along here with my co-hosts, Craig Shoemaker and Ward Bell. And we are here to sing John Mellencamp songs to you for the entire episode of WebRush today.
I didn't know I was supposed to have my acoustic guitar ready for this. Give me a heads up next time.
We can go back and get stolen. Let's get down to the real nitty gritty.
And that is the topic today, right? It's about the grids, about the nitty gritty. It's about data grids. It's about web grids. It's a little ditty about a gritty. And we've all used grids out there. And I think many of you can tell that I have had no sleep in the past 24 hours. So it's going to be a fun episode. I hope you all enjoy it today. But we have some great folks on the show today, including our guest of honor, the guest with the best, Tanner Lindsley. Welcome to the show.
Thanks for having me, guys.
And to give you all a little more information about Tanner, let me tell you about Tanner Lindsley. Tanner is a co-founder at Nozzle. The creator of TanStack has 10 years of JavaScript experience. He's passionate about TypeScript, open source software, React, and UI, UX, and DX. So user interfaces, user experience, and developer experience. Welcome to the show, Tanner.
Good to see you, Tanner. You know, our audience can't tell because they're not seeing the video, but there's this huge bulge of water in a ceiling over John's head, and we're all waiting for it to burst and come down right in the middle of the show. So if you hear hoots and hollers, we're celebrating the results of that hurricane. Sorry, John.
It's okay. Yes. And it's good to, I'm a glass half full kind of person, folks. And just so you know, we are recording on the morning after Hurricane Ian just left my neighborhood. My house and my family are okay. We did have some damage, and Ward is not kidding. There is literally a large water bulge coming out of one of my walls that I have to get fixed. So I've got my swimmies just in case. But Tanner, we're not here to talk about Hurricane Ian. You do a little bit of work with data grids, do you not?
Yeah, a little bit. Here and there.
Tell us about it. I mean, first of all, what exactly is a web grid? Like, describe to you when you think of grids, like, what kind of functionality are you looking for?
It greatly depends on who's asking and for what problem. But the first question I like to ask is, like, what do you mean? A data grid, well, what do you mean? Because there's a kind of the angle coming at it from very lightweight HTML kind of a perspective. Usually when people say data grid there, they're thinking of a table that's got a lot of like expected functionality, you know, sortable columns, column reordering and sizing, and maybe some filtering, right? So to someone who's working with static HTML tables, that's a data grid because it's more than they're usually used to. And then there's the other side of it where like you're like a stock trader ticker app, and a data grid is something so much more. That's, you know, it could mean hundreds of thousands of rows and, you know, 100 columns wide, and every single cell on the table is updating at like, you know, every 100 milliseconds or something. So those are very different. Those are very different things. So, but, you know, we like to lump them into just data grid. So, it definitely depends on, you know, who's asking and for what purpose.
Yeah, that the second one you're talking about really does fit the profile of an audience that's sitting in front of the application all day long. It's critical to their what they're doing every minute of the day. And they don't care about pretty. They want as much information on the screen as possible. It can be totally, some of these things I've seen are particularly trading apps are so cryptic that if you walked up in front of it, you would just say it's blinking lights. I wrote some of those actually back in the day when I worked for some financial institutions. It's the worst possible user experience for the casual user, but it's, you know, anybody who's been in the enterprise game has built something not maybe as extreme as what you're describing, but in that realm of like, let's see how many columns and rows we can get on the screen. And you need something industrial strength to do that, because writing it yourself,
that's so messy. And I actually just thought of another perspective too. There's kind of seem to be these three camps. I was like, what other perspective is just totally different? And those are the Excel people. It's the, well, I need a data grid. And I'm like, okay, what do you want? Well, I basically want Excel, but in the browser.
That's totally what I found when I was in consulting. Anytime we built an app, if there was a table on the page, they would ask for feature after feature after feature. And you're just like, okay, so I'm re-implementing Excel in the browser. I mean,
right. We could just embed Google Sheets if you want.
Yeah. Which, exactly. And Excel is probably the most popular programming language in the world.
Yeah.
To be honest.
And quite frankly, you can do a lot with Excel. So quick side story on that. I was touring. I used to work at Disney's. No surprise to folks who listen to this show. And I was touring some folks from another company to show how we managed at the time all the park attractions and rides. There's like a control center. And there's this awesome map. This was like 15 years ago. There's this awesome map that shows all the parks in Disneyland and Disney World, California and Florida. And the map is like live, real time, showing like where lightning strikes are, what the rides are, etc. I don't even know if the app still exists, but this app was written in Excel. The entire app. I mean, and it, you'd be, you, if you don't see it, you wouldn't believe me on this, because it's absolutely insane. The amount of code that was in behind this thing, and what, VBScript, I guess?
VBA for the win.
You know, yeah. VBA and yeah. The sheets and all that, but right in the bottom corner, you know, powered by Microsoft Excel. So don't ever tell me Excel can't do that.
Absolutely. It's funny you say that, because one of my co-founders, so quick aside about Nozzle, we started Nozzle 8 years ago. We reverse engineer Google search rankings. And you know, we turn it into big data, give it back to marketers and whatnot. But one of our co-founders, one of the other co-founders, back in the day, he wrote an entire web scraper and like SEO, you know, analyzing like app all in VBA. And we're like, dude, what are you doing? You need to learn a proper programming language. You'll be so much more powerful. And we introduced him to PHP and Go. And you know, he's written amazing things now. But yeah, I was just like, really, VBA?
Hey, Ward, you know, I was building an application the other day, and I pulled in this really cool UI component, but it brought along a lot of dependencies with it. How do you deal with that?
I don't like that, John. It reminds me that the AG grid, which is an advanced editable data table that we use in a lot of our enterprise apps because it addresses the complex scenarios we encounter. AG grid doesn't have any dependencies at all.
Zero dependencies. Well, tell me, why is that good? Like, what is the value of having zero dependencies?
Well, it's wonderful not having to wonder if while I'm pulling that in, I'm also pulling jQuery in or Lodash or who knows what. In part because that's extra stuff coming over the wire. It's extra files that I don't know what they're all about. It means when my client security team has to evaluate this, they're evaluating AG Grid and not everything else that might be slipping in under the covers or something that we have to worry about there.
You know, it's great to see this day and age, you can have a zero dependency library that does something like complex data grid functionality. So all of you out there, do check out AG Grid at their website at ag-grid.com.
What kind of scenarios are you seeing most? You have the three different camps that you described. So like these days, what are you seeing people mostly using your grids for?
I'd say like a vast majority of the users are the people who they're dealing with an HTML table, right? Whether that's just some data they're presenting, it's a, you know, a CRUD system they're building. You know, very, very common use cases is that, you know, we just have some tabular data. They're showing a table to their users and they just want to make it interactive, right? That's the most common use case that I see. doesn't mean that there aren't plenty of people asking for these really intense data grids. You know, more often than not, those are startups who know they're going to need it, or they're existing companies who are like, we've tried building our own, we don't know what to do, right? And that's where there's definitely higher level decisions to be made about what technology you use. But I guess I would say there's a lot more money to be had in these big data grids. There's a lot more people to be had in kind of the lighter weight smart tables, maybe we'll call them, right?
So there's a lot of different players in this space. What do you think is the difference between someone who does an okay job at building a grid like this and someone who like, organization, like what makes a really good grid?
Speed and performance is going to be topmost for a lot of people's minds. Especially if their expectation is that they're going to be loading tons of data into, you know, this grid on the client all at once, right? I'm very much in the camp of do as much on the server as you can, but for some reason, people like to dump a shiz ton of data into the client
reason.
And be like, look at this, look how cool this is, you know? That's problematic for me, but speed and performance is always top of mind for people because, you know, here's a scenario. I don't know how reactive we want to get or whatever, but like, I always tell people, they're like, hey, I rendered this HTML table and it's kind of slow, you know? And I'm like, well, how many rows are you rendering? They're like, 100. How many columns are you rendering? 10. Okay. So you're rendering 1,000 elements. What's in those elements? Oh, well, I'm rendering like a chart and a number and then like an edit thing. And I'm like, well,
each one has a canvas that we're drawing to. And
yeah, and I'm like, do you see the issue here? So grids are performance problems by nature because they're multiplicative in every direction that you take them. So, you know, you add a column, you add a row, everything's mm-hmm. going to expand very quickly. So performance usually is either at the top of mind very beginning or is going to be at top of mind very soon.
Or you know it isn't because you are doing something simple.
Right.
And yeah, I mean, because I'm in that gamut in there. But I agree with you, the vast majority of people are just trying to do the simple things. Maybe, but sometimes those simple things are just beyond the reach of writing an HTML table, right?
Yeah.
Like sorting and column moving and a nested, you know, you click on a row and then you want the nested detail underneath it. There may not be a lot of data, but you want this sort of presentation richness. I'm saying that because I was working on that last night. It just so happens. And it's the richness within grid boundaries that's the issue. I'm able to steer clear of performance because I know that my data set isn't that big. So there's still but I was struggling to deliver with this open source thing that I got that is no longer supported to be able to express the richness that I wanted, you know, shape things properly. And so I think there's a huge segment of our market that's trying to do that. Maybe they know that they don't have a lot of data, but they've got to present it well. And then I've got to present it well, and I got all of this incredible data that's driving a performance issue. For me, that's, you know, it's sort of 1, 2, 3 across the spectrum like that. Does that align with your view?
Absolutely. And, you know, the presenting it well thing is interesting. I like that perspective you bring up because even for the simplest of grids, right, let's say we have 5 columns and 10 rows, right? We're already talking about multidimensional data.
Mm-hmm.
And most of our APIs that we either use or design in a lot of our front-end frameworks or JavaScript, they're not multidimensional.
Right.
They're very flat. We're mapping, we're reducing, you know, we're not really working across this multidimensional space very much. And we can get into that space, you know, with a lot of like nested looping and nested iteration things that we can do in all of our different languages. But it quickly becomes unwieldy. So we're talking about presenting all of this stuff well. It very quickly becomes a design problem of how do you model your columns and your configurations and the way that you want to present data to people without, you know, rendering out every single tiny, you know, here's a TR, here's a TD, here's a TH, you know. When you're at scale and you need to worry about the presentation and cleanliness of a table, you can't really be worrying about it on, you know, at that microscopic level.
Exactly.
That's where a library comes in, really.
You can make an expensive mistake trying to skin that cat all by yourself without anything. But you know what? You find that out a little late. I can just do this with a couple of TRTDs, and then before you know it, you've spent thousands of the client's dollars wrestling with that stuff that you could have solved, you know, with a quick something. So right. You're in the something business. I just had a quick look at your TAN table. Is that what it's called? And then I know a bit about AG Grid, and they have different. They both seem to be saying we can go after complex presentation issues, but they're different, right. Dramatically different. And you guys actually work together. So can you tell us a little about that?
Yeah. First thing I should do is probably we should drop that. There's a link in here to a talk I just gave at React Summit. 5 years of building React table. I actually talk about some of these differences in that talk, but way more polished and, you know, in a very dramatic way up on stage. So it might be fun to watch that talk, but also, so AG Grid and now TanStack table, it started as React table, right? But since become relatively agnostic. So we are very similar in the term that we are trying to help people build data grids, right? But we're very, very different in our approach to doing that. And the differences in those approaches, they actually marry well together because they're completely different, like the people who are going to end up using them. And we actually didn't realize this until very recently when we decided to work together to try and just make the grid space a better place for people to be. So let me start with AG Grid. And again, I'm not even super, super familiar with everything that AG Grid can do, but I know enough, right? That AG Grid is this super powerful tool that just comes ready to use out of the box. You can drop it into an app and feed it as much data as you want, and it's going to have everything ready to go. Like, it can do pivoting and grouping and, you know, all of the data grid things that you want it to do. It's going to do, and it's going to do way, way fast and great. It really is a great experience. So why wouldn't everybody just use AG Grid, right? That's the question.
Great point. Question.
Right. And so the answer to that question, it comes in kind of some of the subtle technicalities of AG Grid, right? So when you bring AG Grid in, you're paying a cost on bundle size, first of all. So with all that power comes bundle size responsibility, right? AG Grid is not tiny or small by any means. It's not massively huge, but it is a significant cost in your bundle. So that makes it difficult for anyone looking to target really fast page loads, page speed scores, anybody who needs to render data in a table for SEO purposes and have it all be really fast. You might run into some performance challenges there. And that's okay. Usually data grids, in the way that we talked about them being like these big apps, right? That's usually not their use case. But having tables in like more of the, hey, I have an HTML table that needs to be smart sense, that is a use case for it, where we do want it to be lightweight. And then the other biggest pain point with not just with AG Grid, but with the batteries included grids is usually it's the direction you have to work with the library to make it look exactly how you want and behave exactly how you want it to. It's designed to be really fast and performant And there are constraints in AG Grid in place that make that possible. And that's a good thing. If those constraints weren't there, they couldn't guarantee that it would be so good and fast, right? But as soon as you want to start disassembling the table and kind of putting things together in exactly the way you want them to be, you might bump up against some of those constraints. So before bridging the gap, let me go down to React Table now very quickly. So, or TANSAC Table. So TANSAC Table is a headless utility. It's not even a UI library. Let me reiterate about that. So when I say headless, I mean that it doesn't render any markup or styles for you at all. It's not what it does. It doesn't even have the utilities to do that. It's just the logic for it. So at the end of the day, you are still writing a little bit of templating work and putting together your grid markup and styles the way that you want. So from there, it's the utility, it's the logic and the brains that sit on top of your markup and styles that isn't going to go as far as AG Grid and saying, hey, you want to power, you know, some trading app with this. Probably not, right? It has limitations that direction because we aren't constrained and optimized for those use cases. But it is extremely lightweight, right? Like just a few kilobytes. And it's very, very flexible with the way that you want to display and build your data grid.
So Tanner, this sounds like I go down to the auto dealer and I say, I want to buy a car. But what I get is a chassis, some wheels, and the engine, and then I'm supposed to put the body and the seats in. Is that?
Yeah, that's exactly what it is. Or it would be like, hey, here's the car with a drivetrain, right? You have to pick your body, pick your paint, you know, put it together, uh-huh. And then you can drive down the road, right?
So can I reach on the shelf and pull off a body and paint from my grid, or
a very basic one? Yeah, yeah, I mean, like there's examples to pull off very basic, you know, standardized kind of versions of it. But that's the thing with headless is when you have a headless utility, there's an infinite number of ways to approach the markup and styles question, right? Just in the JavaScript ecosystem, you start talking about styling and it's just going to explode, right? Are you using styled components or Tailwind or, you know, what are you like? Honestly, this evolution was an answer to that problem for me. I got sick of dealing with all of that. How do I move my pagination up? You know, how do I change the styles?
Yeah.
And I'm just like, you know what? Now you can do whatever you want. Just go for it.
That is true. I don't know. I'm sure AG Grid. I don't know it as deeply as I should. Has lots of flexibility points, but that's the price you pay for buying something batteries included. Is that, you know, when it comes time to saying, well, I know it seems strange, but I want this thing from, you know, up there in the right hand corner. You know, nobody can imagine all of that or ship all of that.
Going back to the car analogy, it's not saying that AG Grid can't be styled and moved around and, you know, but it's like the car. If you bought this, you know, big Hummer or whatever, are you going to deconstruct it and then rebuild it the way you want? Like you can get there. We're developers. We can do anything, right?
Right.
But it's the amount of work that we're willing to do to get there. So we're kind of coming at it like, you know, I'm on this side of the spectrum and AG Grid's on the other side. And you can go anywhere you want within the spectrum, but you got to pick a door.
Yeah.
And you got to hope that your destination is closest to the door you picked. So.
Yeah. That makes sense. Even if we're mixing analogies here. Yeah.
Okay. Right.
So honing in on the speed and performance thing a little bit more.
Yeah.
There's probably a handful of tactics or practices or patterns or whatever that you use in order to do this. So like, you know, element virtualization, like what kinds of things are you doing in order to make it as performant as possible?
So we are using memoization. Memoization is a huge one. So the data pipeline in React in TANSAC Table is different from AG Grid. They have very, very sophisticated performance architecture inside of AG Grid. I believe it's very graph-like, you know, kind of like probably like an Excel table. Very, very efficient. TANSAC Table is more of a top-down approach. So there's a data pipeline. At the top, you have your data you put in, and then, you know, just all the transformations that happen to your data. at any point in that pipeline, things can be invalidated and, you know, recomputed from there down. So still very, very performant. Maybe not up to, you know, 5 million rows like AG Grid, but definitely up into the tens and hundreds of thousands. It, again, it's all very circumstantial.
I still say, if you're trying to put 5 million rows in a grid on a web page, maybe we should think about something more, you know?
Yeah, we might be bike shedding a bit there, but
I just worry. I mean, I know we hear this a lot. I don't think I'll ever stop hearing that request from users. You know, as many times, as many rational arguments as you have, even the basic one of show me, like, dear user, show me how you're going to process 5 million rows on the screen. I want to watch you do it. You know, you still get the request. You're like, but I need them. I have it today in Excel, so I need it. Okay.
Absolutely. And, you know, usually it doesn't happen. And then you convince them otherwise.
You know, our company uses AG Grid in a lot of places, just to stick with that. And performance isn't the reason. It's great that the performance is there, and you couldn't do the kind, it gets back to that display complex data in complex ways and do it well. And that you can't, even with a lot fewer rows, you cannot do that in a performant way. And we're not sort of saying abstract performance here. We're talking about the user will look at it and it'll be jittery and essentially unacceptable. You know, my clients, you know, the users have pretty low standards, but even they, and I'm so glad they do, cause I'm programming for them. Right. So,
I'm wondering if your clients actually listen. Yeah, exactly. Are they members?
I hope they aren't listening. It's the clients are very feature centric, right? Like, deliver me the value. So they'll put up with a lot. I don't say that they should. I'm saying that they will.
Enterprise clients, I would definitely agree.
They don't want to, but they will because it's captive. But even there, you can crush it where they simply cannot do their jobs if you don't deliver the performance. But the focus there is on, can you do it? And The million row case isn't very common, but having enough data there to destroy the experience happens to us all, and that's why we need a grid.
I think performance is still important, but I just like to talk about it within the respect of the 20 rows that you should be rendering, right? Because there still are performance implications there. I love that you brought up element virtualization, because that's something that AG Grid absolutely does. I would expect they have to do that.
Well, that's where the tool should do it for you, right? Like the developer, when people say, I'm going to write my own grid, and I'm just going to, like, even go to the rows of, let's go to the side of, it's not a million rows, but I have seen this too, where you only have, let's say, 50 rows, but you have 100 columns.
Yeah.
I've seen that too, where it's, you know, now you're just horizontally scrolling to death.
And you're recalculating in each one.
Uh-huh.
And
they're all calculating based upon something else. And then you start getting into subgroupings, right? You got groupings and subgroupings and drilling downs and the complicated mess. This is exactly why, like, I know you mentioned, you know, the cost can be a barrier sometimes to buying a grid. But this is exactly why I would rather buy something than spend, you know, 3-4 months with a couple of developers making sure it actually works. Because then you get something that's hardened and tried and true. But if you don't need those things, that's also like a great reason not to go overboard and delve into one of these paid products, in my mind. If you don't need something super complex like Ward is talking about, you know?
I think finding that threshold is hard.
It
for
is.
A lot of people.
So what do you recommend, Tanner? How do you look at that threshold?
You know, the way I see the threshold is I have built TanStack Table to kind of meet that threshold in my perspective. Is there things that I think, you know, if you can do it with a headless utility, then you should, and that's fine. But anything beyond that, I send people to AG Grid all the time. And I'll tell you, like, they come to me and they say, I want filtering. I'm like, done. Sorting, done. You know, I want pagination and I want grouping. Okay. And they say, I want aggregations. And that's where I'm like, okay, like, we have aggregations, but you're nearing the edge, right? And then they say, okay, I need a pivot table. I need like a full-on pivot table with like editable cells, you know, with like all the goodies that come along with that. And that's where I'm going to go, all right, let me stop you right there. If you go down the route of a headless grid and you want a pivot table, you're going to be building a lot of UI, a lot of things that come with that, right? There's only so much logic that goes into the pivot table before you actually have to write the markup. And I'm like, look at this thing over here at AG Grid. They just have a pivot mode. You just turn on, they got all the columns there, you drag and drop, do your aggregations. You know, and that's usually the inflection point that I see. And if people are like, you know what, we really need this pivot mode stuff, and we really need, like Wardwick, what you were saying, the features, right? These really, really advanced features of the grid. I'm like, you know what, you should just pay for the license and get AG Grid. Unless you have the time to build all that stuff and the UI that comes with them, right?
Yeah, but what's your time worth? Yeah. I you know, or who are you paying? I mean, that none of us have the time. I would argue you're fooling yourself. None of us have the time. Because I don't know about you, but I mean, any developer is going to get paid more than the cost of that license to get those effects. No matter how any developer who lives and eats in the United States.
Yeah, I mean, I'm not going to say that I haven't met developers in the last 3 weeks who have actively disagreed with you, that they say we have the developers, we have the money, and we are willing to put the time into it because that's the level of control that they want. To them, I say, just as long as you understand what you're getting into, that's fine. You know,
well, it's always fun to reinvent the wheel. I mean, the not invented here syndrome is everywhere, but this is just one of those places where you should sit up and take notice that, you know, especially if you're going to the level of sophistication where you're talking about a bunch of updated, you know, continually updated rows or pivot tables or aggregations or pick your advanced scenario. It's like, just go and pull
charting. Actually, and it doesn't have to be that advanced, like charting. Like, and it's a very common thing for people who want to have a visual representation of their data. That's not something I'm willing to to try and do myself.
A lot of that, every time somebody asks, you know, I'm going to build my own table, I just say, no, don't do it. You shouldn't, right? And it really just comes down to, okay, you're going to use a tool and you should. But which tool should you use? In my mind, that decision's become very easy. I have built my library to cause me the least amount of stress and daily time burn, right? Because open source it can be a drain on people, including me. And I'm not looking to build an enterprise data grid. So I have purposely stayed away from AG Grid's, you know, particular use cases because I think it does it great, you know? And I can handle this other area that is definitely easily within reach for people who just have tables that need, you know, sorting, filtering, whatnot. Like a great example, I don't know, GitHub. A lot of us use GitHub. Have you guys seen their new issues table beta that they have?
No, not yet.
So they're still working on it. They have a beta out, but you can use it. I believe it's under some little beta button. But you can look at all of your issues and pull requests and everything inside of this big data grid, right? And it's a very custom experience where they have, you know, short codes and things that you can do inside of this table to organize and tag your issues and whatnot. And they decided to use React Table to build the core functionality of it and then use all of their standard GitHub UI stuff on top of it. And I think that's a great example of where headless grids are a great decision, right? They didn't need pivoting. They're not a trading app, you know, it's more just of an organizational thing and ended up being a very custom UI.
They need a lightweight. They need real lightweight. They still need to be super lightweight.
Very lightweight. So it's those kinds of use cases, right? And anytime somebody has a blank HTML table and it's just static, I say, add React Table to it. It's going to take you 10 minutes and you're going to gain a lot of features out of it.
Really?
Yeah.
I got to look at this. So maybe you're my answer, but I noticed that you refer to React a lot. Do you work with any other frameworks?
Yeah. So recently I had this, I'm going agnostic, framework agnostic with all my libraries, right? So now we have React Table, which is the adapter for React. We have Solid Table because I'm in tight with the Solid guys. I have invited countless number of people to do Angular Table. And I have a lot of people who are interested. The adapter that you would need to write for Angular Table would be pretty lightweight. We're talking maybe 200 lines, 300 lines here. Yeah. It hasn't happened yet, but it's headless, and the core is implemented just with TypeScript and classes.
Expect a PR from Ward by next week.
Oh, I can't wait. That would be so cool, you know. But yeah, the idea is that you have your markup and your styles already in place, or you can easily find a place where those are. And then you say, hey, I want to create a new table, just the logic for it. And then you take the primitives from that return, that table object, and you just kind of, put them onto your existing markup, and it just makes them smart.
I saw this at Disney World. Yeah, she just came along and she just sprinkled a little over the top of it. It's one of those, it's just magic.
Are you talking about Tinkerbell the developer?
That's what's nice about headless, right? Is it's very easy to integrate. You brought up a virtualization, Craig, and it's funny. You're like, oh yeah, I should handle it for you. TanStack Table actually doesn't do virtualization because virtualization is a UI problem. But we have a headless virtualization library called TanStack Virtual. Headless virtualization. Wrap your head around that, right? It's pretty cool.
Yeah, I don't understand. So you're dealing with DOM elements.
Yep.
But it's headless. So
you are in charge of
yeah,
the
you
rendering.
Gotta unravel this for me.
It's like serverless servers, right? I never understood serverless either.
Sure. Go to tanstack.com.
Okay.
Click on TanStack Virtual and just head down to the example. There's like a code sandbox.
Okay. All right.
And
I'm there.
Open the source directory and click on main.tsx. I know this is React, but you can wrap your head around it, okay? Go down to line 45.
Yeah, I'm slow. I'm still looking for the source directory.
You're good. So let me describe what you're going to see. You'll see a call to a hook called use virtualizer, and you're supplying the count of how many things you're going to virtualize, a function that returns the scroll element, like the DOM element that you're going to be scrolling inside of, and then an estimate size function where you can just kind of make your best guess on how big each item is going to be. Then you take the row virtualizer object that you get back from it, and you have a bunch of methods on it now. There's a get total size, which gives you the height of the inner virtual element, which you can apply however you want. There's a dot get virtual items, which gives you a big array of virtual items that then have things like the index, a measure element function, which can let you do dynamically sizing elements. There's a start, which is just how many pixels down it needs to be translated to. And then there's a size that shows you how much, vertical or horizontal space that needs to take up.
So if you're using the virtualization aspect of it, are you layering your UI elements and styles on top of the grid part, and you're using both together, or is it just the virtualization one?
You just put them together. So when in the table you get, if you say, you know what, I don't need virtualization, it's not even there. You're just doing pagination. But if you need virtualization, you just say, you know what, render all the rows from the table, but put them inside of a use virtual, right? And you can just window through the ones that are visible. And here's the funny thing is if you need to virtualize your columns, you make another virtualizer, but for your columns, and you just put it this way, right? So virtualizer it doesn't have an axis. It just knows.
Right. It just knows that you're virtualizing elements. Right. That's all it cares about.
So you
about.
Mix them together and you get a grid.
Interesting. So, wow.
Yeah. Headless is weird, but it's a lot of fun.
Are you building a web application? Need to deliver it soon and don't have the people to do it? Maybe you're not sure your company has the skill set or experience to do it. And maybe we can help. I'm your host, Ward Bell, and my day job is building applications for companies like yours. I don't do it alone. I'm president of IdeaBlade, a consultancy that specializes in enterprise web application development. We're particularly strong in Angular, RxJS, NGRX Redux on the front end, and .NET and Microsoft technologies on the server. We're a small, tight-knit group of people handpicked by me for their expertise, experience, integrity, and team spirit. Maybe we can help you with architectural guidance and hands-on development. And if there's something we don't know, and in our field, really, there's too much to know, we can draw on our personal connections in the Microsoft RD, MVP, and Google GDE networks, as well as our international circle of really great developers, people we know and trust personally. If you got a project that's keeping you up at night, shoot us an email at info@ideablade.com. That's info@ideablade.com. And now back to the show.
One thing I want to mention here, Tanner, for our folks too, is we use some terms a lot of times, I think, you know, some of us understand, some of us don't, and some of us think we understand, like myself, but don't always understand. So let me explain a little bit. Headless. Craig pointed out the elephant in the room. Headless. We talk about this. What we're really talking about, like I often think about it in like the words of a browser. So like a headless browser, which effectively means, correct me if I'm wrong, that you're running through the same things that a browser would do, except it doesn't actually render to anything. There's no UI. Why would you want to do that? Can you, I think, to help explain this, why would somebody want a headless anything? Like, what's the point of that?
It's the goal of decoupling logic from how it's applied, right? When you have very strict coupling between your logic and how you apply it, it becomes, you know, magnitudes less portable, right? Table logic, for instance. Once I extracted the table logic out of React table into TanStack table and made it a core thing, now I can just write these little adapters that turn it into each framework, right? And then also by extracting all the logic away from the markup and styles, now you don't have any constraints with, can I use styled components? Can I use, you know, it, the flexibility becomes infinite, essentially, as long as you have the right abstraction points. So headless is really, I'd say, its biggest goal is about reuse, right? You're able to reuse headless logic in a lot of different places. And it's also about customization and just being able to make your own decisions about how you apply the logic itself.
Tanner, thanks for coming on today. And want to appreciate all the knowledge you're dropping on us about grids. And I think it's always a great discussion because we talk about a lot of the web frameworks. We don't always talk about kind of the practicality of applying some of these things in the real world. So it's great to hear somebody actually using this stuff. And it's also good to hear Ward have somebody to talk to about whatever he was coding last night, which sounds like it just happened to be fortuitous today.
It was totally a total accident. I was cursing the decision I had made. I knew I wanted to go beyond HTML tables. And so, but my client didn't want to pay for, and I didn't want my client to pay for something that was as simple as what I was doing. So I grabbed an old open source library that 4 years later, I'm trying to figure out what it does and nobody's supporting it. And it doesn't make any sense. And I can't do this and I can't do that. And I'm banging my head on it. And I'm saying, how many thousands of dollars should I be billing the client? Because I made this terrible choice. Actually, I can't. All right. I'm not going to be able to bill the client for 6 or 7 hours of work I did last night. To no particular avail. If I had only made a good choice in the beginning and bit the bullet and had them pay a silly license fee. And by the way, Tanner, is your thing, how much does your thing cost?
It's open source. It's free.
Oh, okay. Well, maybe, but it wasn't there 4 years ago, damn it. So anyway,
Tanner, you had an opportunity to get some money out of Ward today.
Yes, you just missed it. Yes, you did. Yes, you did. At least a cup of coffee. Yeah, it's just an accident of this. But we talk about all those poor suckers out there who make the bad decision to do it themselves. We forget that we sometimes make that same mistake over and over again. I'm still making it. I don't know about you guys, but I can't seem to stop making the same mistake. That's my thought for the day.
Every single one of my libraries started with that mistake. So,
well, Ward, you really led us right into what we do in our last section of the day, which is our final thoughts for our audience. So, Ward, I'll take that as your final thought for our audience today. And then I will lead into Mr. Shoemaker. What's your final thought today for the audience, Craig?
I think if people aren't careful, they might listen to this episode and think that maybe it's like a commercial for AG Grid or TanStack Grid or anything like that. And obviously, we recognize a lot of value in these tools. And, you know, full disclosure, we AG Grid is a sponsor of the show. But I think the point is you have to really work hard to try and find the right tool for the right job. And when you're looking at billing clients or you're looking at spending your company's money, or if you're just burning your own time in your own endeavor, you just have to be strategic about what you're going to spend your time on. And this is one of those places to where it just doesn't really make sense to go it alone or to build from scratch. So if anything anybody walks away from, I hope it's that just to be strategic about what tools you use.
Great point. Great point. And good call out for talking about TanStack as well as AG Grid here. We're not advocating specific tools, although they're both awesome tools that you could try out. But I think the big lesson here is a great, Craig, to make sure you do a little bit of investigation into what you're going to have, because I'll add one more piece onto that. You're going to have to live with this thing for a long time. Like Ward just called out. He's been living with his bad decision for 4 years. So sometimes these calls we make might be small up front.
Well, it seemed like the right decision 4 years ago. Maybe it was great. It may be, you know, but it, well, you don't know. You know, that's the thing about 4 years later when you live with a real application.
You don't.
And you go. Mm.
Also, if you do make a call like that and 4 years later you realize it wasn't okay, don't beat yourself up over it. You know, just move along. Not every decision we make in software development is going to be perfect.
You know, I like to look at that and say that code, if it's been working for 4 years, it's been making you money for 4 years. That's
I like that philosophy.
That's a pretty good return, right?
That's a good bright side.
I heard from a developer like once that if you write hot garbage code that you're not proud of, that sits there and makes money for you for the next 5 years, that's some really good hot garbage code, and you should be happy that it exists. So,
well, on that note, speaking of hot garbage, let's not do that. But Tanner, we haven't asked you yet what your final thoughts are for the audience. So what would you like to share?
Final thoughts? Just give Headless a chance. I see it's intimidating right now for people. Like, what is Headless? What is this? You know, I think it kind of goes back to the old days of like Linux and Unix, where it was all about building these really tiny little programs and utilities that could kind of be strung together in any way that you wanted, right? And I like that idea. And that's how I approach a lot of my open source development, is I just want to have a bunch of little primitive utilities that can be put together in a great way. And Headless plays a big part in that. So,
So we're ending on a John Lennon song. All we are saying is give Headless a chance.
Oh, my. I don't remember those exact words.
That's
from the
exactly
John Lennon
what
song.
John was talking about, baby.
I'm sure it was. No, it wasn't, folks. I guess my final thoughts for today for everybody is, and I am definitely, I've got Hurricane Ian on my mind. I've got family here in Florida I haven't heard from in 24 hours. I'm a little worried. I know there's thousands of other people who are in the similar boat. By the time this airs, hopefully everything is safe and everybody is happy. But just remember what's important in life is kind of my final thought for today. Remember what's important out there. And don't fret the small stuff like which grid you picked 4 years ago for your project. And I want to thank all of you for listening to us every week, and especially for our sponsors for keeping us on the air. For AG Grid, for Idea Blade, thank you, Ward, and for Narwhal. And for you, our guest Tanner, for coming on and being our 206th guest on our show. So thank you so much. You'll all hear from us every week, every Thursday. Hear from you next time. Bye-bye.